and welcome to Family Matters. Of course, my lovely co-host is here, Judge Michelle Laurent. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
I am great. How is everything with you today?
Well, I'm wondering what you could tell us about the visitation interference bill. They're saying it just needs a signature. What do you hear?
You know, I hear feedback, and I'm not sure why I hear that. That's crazy.
Oh, you mean you hear an echo?
Yeah. Do you hear that?
No.
That's crazy. Okay, good. I'll ignore it. The visitation interference bill, and for those of you who don't know what visitation interference is, it is when one parent tries to withhold visitation time from the other parent. And that is a crazy thing to have happen, but there is a couple in central Illinois, Dale and Penny Watkins, who decided that they were going to be really strong, terrific advocates, and they put a bill before the legislature called the Stephen Watkins Memorial Bill. Their son was shot while trying to pick up his daughter for visitation, and that bill, I'm happy to say, passed the legislature unanimously on Sunday. And as I say all the time, for all the things that we do wrong in Illinois, we're publicized for, we do family law right, and we are making progress here in that arena. So I'm pleased to say that that is now on its way to Governor Quinn's desk, and we hope that he will sign it, and we have every indication that he will.
So you think it sounds good? Hadn't heard nothing that they, because then I just heard some rumblings the other day. Well, don't congratulate anybody yet. So I didn't know what that meant.
Well, no, I think that, you know, everybody is leery of what the governor may or may not do. So I think you have to always be careful saying that things are a go for sure. But I think this one looks like it is in the hopper and ready to become law. And it is law immediately when the governor signs it. So I think it's going to send a really strong message to parents who are engaging in visitation interference. And hopefully, Michelle, judges will look at this new law and say, you know, I need to take this a little more seriously. What do you think?
I think they will. Oh, yeah. I think they will. I mean, we had the visit, you know, they had a criminal visitation that I never heard anybody using.
Yeah.
But that probably, the barrier on that was probably because of the criminal nature. It was like such a big jump. But I think that this is going to make a big difference as another tool in the box, and it's just great.
Well, that's good. The other thing I wanted to tell you about today is that I got a book in the mail today, and you and I have talked about this book many times. Jennifer McBride wrote this book, great advocate in Minnesota. It's called The Childless Parent, so C-H-I-L-D. New word, L-E-S-S, parent, and it's snapshots of parental alienation. And Jennifer's forte is photography, and she takes pictures specifically of trees and wildlife and rocks and all kinds of things. So the book has really interesting pictures, but it is a story of how to navigate parental alienation. You and I did a foreword, as you know, or not a foreword, but an endorsement for the book. And if anyone wants to use the book as a fundraiser, she's happy to help facilitate that. And you can reach Jennifer by email, touchingthetrees@gmail.com. And it is really a terrific piece of information for parents who are navigating parental alienation. So had to get my plug in on that one.
No, that's really good. And for all the people who have been, you know, kind of our loyal listeners, which is
yes,
so many people, tonight we're doing sort of something a little bit more expanded than the unique family problem that we usually talk about. Because this is the topic of the show is Family Matters, it's very, very family related. It does touch parental alienation insofar as a child is being abused. And we on Family Matters I'm going to let Jill tell you about the subject, that this is such a concern to us as well in trying to protect children that we've decided to do something a touch off topic, but what we believe is right on topic. So
you're right. And our guest tonight is a New York Times best-selling author, which is a wonderful feat in itself. As you know, you and I know, Michelle, we didn't get there, but we will someday, right?
I don't know. I didn't check lately.
Well, I know we could be there today. You should look when we hang up.
Yeah, I will.
We have, again, New York Times bestselling author Jody Blanco with us tonight, and she is a survivor, an expert, and an activist, and she is one of the country's preeminent voices on the subject of bullying. She has been inspired by the thousands of letters she receives from students, parents, teachers, and adult survivors, and Jody has become one of the nation's most sought-after keynote speakers, seminar presenters, and crisis consultants. More than 500,000 students, teachers, and parents have participated in her acclaimed anti-bullying program. It's not just joking around. Her story of survival and forgiveness has drawn the attention of the national media, as well as recognition from the United States government. Jody is also the author of Please Stop Laughing at Us, One Survivor's Extraordinary Quest to Prevent School Bullying, the sequel to Please Stop Laughing at Me, One Woman's Inspirational Story. Jody, welcome.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I am honored to join you, ladies.
I am so glad that you could be here tonight. This is such an interesting story or interesting topic for us, because what we do is parental alienation most of the time. And parental alienation, and I'm not sure if you know what that means, but individuals who engage in parental alienation are like the mean kids in high schools or grade schools who demand that their friends be angry with whomever they're angry with and hate whomever they hate. In children, this phenomenon is usually called relational aggression, and now they become parents. So they're mad because their relationship ended, even if they're the one who initiated the breakup. So there's hundreds of thousands of parents all over the world who are experiencing loss of a relationship with a child because of bullying.
Well, and it's a really interesting tie-in, because so many of the bully kids, I mean, I'm a survivor of school bullying, and I travel around the country, and I share my story in schools, actually all over the world, and I meet with bullies and the bullied all day, every day, and I literally interface and do interventions with thousands of these kids in a year, and I can tell you that so many of these kids are coming from parentally alienated circumstances where you have a married couple, they're going through a divorce, one parent is turning the child against another parent, or kids are in the throes of these horrific custody battles, and you find a tremendous consistency between kids who are in domestically challenged homes. They often become bullies, they often become the bullied, and what you've got to understand, and if there's parents listening to us, I really want them to hear this. For a child, just to be an adolescent and to go to school every day, just to survive socially, takes courage and grace and dignity. To have that further complicated by a mess with their parents or a mess at home, I have so many kids come up to me for interventions in schools, and they say, well, I'm not really being bullied at school, but my situation with my parents is a mess.
Yeah.
So I think that it's an important subject. I mean, and Lisa Madigan and I are going to be tackling it on Monday at an event that she's doing. And I think it's such an important subject, and I applaud you guys for addressing it. I absolutely applaud you for addressing it. So talk to me. What would you like to know?
Well, let's start with where you just touched upon. Let's talk about what goes – let's talk about what are some of the common qualities in the child that's bullied, and then we'll talk about the child that is the bullier, that we should know about? Who is at risk?
Well, I can tell you this, that the typical profile of the bullied child is what I call the ancient child. It's what others might refer to as an old soul. These are typically, you know this kid. This is the kid who's typically more verbally, socially, and intellectually sophisticated than their peers. This is the kid who normally has a terrific vocabulary, who's very grown up and adult-like, who's often referred to as old for their age. They also tend to exhibit a sensitivity and an empathy far beyond their years. And these kids are often bullied because they just don't have that cruel instinct that so many of their classmates have.
What instinct is that? What word is that?
Cruel instinct.
Cruel
that so
instinct.
Many of their classmates have. And the thing about the ancient child that always gets to me is that so often parents are told by mental health professionals, well, your son or daughter is overly sensitive. And that always enrages me because it's not that they're overly sensitive. It's that by comparison, their peers are not sensitive enough. And often these kids, especially when they're in the middle of, you know, domestic disputes in the home, or they're going through a horrific divorce at home, or they're being bandied back and forth, they're being held hostage by some horrific custody battle that's going on in their family lives, these kids are wounded even more deeply than other kids, because they're not only dealing with a circumstance at school that's making them feel jostled and insignificant, they're dealing with a feeling of a lack of control at home. And that's why so many of the suicide interventions that I do with bullied children are bullied kids who have the double whammy of dealing with a divorce or a custody battle.
I don't understand. It's so counterintuitive to me that an old soul would be the one that would be held up to ridicule, because it seems to me that they would have a better facility for letting it roll off their back if they were that old soul.
No, I'll tell you why. Because the thing about the ancient child is that even though they're socially and intellectually more sophisticated than their peers, inside, they are just as driven by the desperate need to fit in as any other kid the same age. Because what you need to understand is that a child can be no more emotionally mature than their biological years will permit. It's a neurological fact that a child is an adolescent until they reach about 22 to 25 years of age, at which point the frontal lobe of the brain completes its development. And so that's why these ancient children suffer so much, these old souls, because they're so mature in every single way outwardly, but inwardly they long and ache to fit in. And what happens is they feel different than their peers. They don't really know why they're different. They just feel differently. They see the world through an adult's eyes, but they experience life through their own age, and they want to fit in, but they just can't. And the harder they try, the more their peers laugh at them and push them away. And these kids, they kind of go through school feeling invisible and ridiculed and wondering when their classmates are going to grow into them or when they're finally going to grow into hanging out with the adults. And I meet tens of thousands of them in my travels. And so many parents are well-meaning and well-intentioned, but they don't know how to help these lonely, bullied children. And that's what I try to assist them in doing, is finding the right way to help their child through these lonely, turbulent years.
So, Jody, what is the best way? Is there a list? I mean, in parental alienation, we have a list of things to identify what parental alienation is. Do you have a set list of things that you say to parents, this is what you can do to help this child who's going to school every day and being ridiculed and picked on by other kids? What do you say to them? Because it has to be just maddening, first of all. And these parents have to be so angry about what's happening to their child. And if you're paying for that education at a private school, you must feel even more enraged.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I always tell parents is this. First of all, these are the things you should never say to a bully child. Never say ignore the bully and walk away. Why? We tell kids all across America, don't be a bystander. If you see somebody getting made fun of, you defend that person. But then we'll turn around and say to that same kid, oh, you're being bullied, just ignore it and walk away. Well, isn't that a mixed message, ladies? Aren't we, in effect, asking that kid to be a bystander in his or her own life? And then we wonder why 20 years from now that same kid gets taken advantage of at every turn, because we were the ones who inadvertently set that precedent by telling them to ignore abuse. We would never think to tell the battered wife to ignore her abused husband. We would never think to expect the rape victim not to file charges. So then why on earth do we have adults telling kids all over this country to just ignore the bullies? It's absurd and ridiculous.
Because, Jody, don't you think, I mean, when you say we don't expect people to tell a battered wife not to speak up, but there are people, I mean, going through what I've gone through with parental alienation, there are people who won't speak up and say what's right. So how do you get these kids to be their own advocate? Or how do you get a parent to be an advocate? Because there are so many people who want to have a hands-off experience. They want to say, it's easier for them to say, turn the other cheek, than to say, stand up for yourself and do what's right.
Right. As an activist, my job isn't to tell parents what they want to hear. My job as an activist is to take action, to motivate action in others. And what I tell parents is this. You have to tell your child to look the bully in the eye, show no fear, no aggression, and no anger, and very calmly tell them to stop. And that even if it doesn't work, at least your child will have stood up for their dignity nonviolently, and that's a skill they need to start learning early on. They might as well learn it now. The other thing I tell parents, which is really important, if there's any parents listening to this, this is such a simple solution. If you've got a child who's either overtly bullied at school, or you have what I call an invisible student, not necessarily a kid who's bullied per se, but just someone who's not on anybody's social radar, who sort of feels like a ghost at school, find your child a brand new social outlet, completely separate from school, maybe a park district one or two neighborhoods away, or a teen community theater program a few towns away, some place where they can make new friends with new faces that they don't go to school with. Not only will it give your child more confidence and give your child something to look forward to on the lonelier days, but bullied kids tend to emit a desperate aura. And the more desperate they become for friends at school, the harder they try. And the harder they try, the more they get turned away. And this new activity will mitigate some of that desperation and give them the connection with their peers that they crave. And the less desperate they are for friendship at school, the more the classmates will turn around. And if you're a parent, here's another thing that your parents need to know. If you're a parent and your kid is getting bullied and you've gone to the school and met with the principal and nothing's happening, nothing's being done, don't give up. You have to stay on top of it like you would any important business project. Ask your child to give you a list of names of other kids at school who are also being bullied. Reach out to their parents. Form a parental coalition at the school and address the school as an organized, cohesive group. A school can ignore one angry parent, but they cannot ignore an organized, cohesive, determined entity of parents.
So do you think that the schools, as long as we've kind of gone right to solutions, do you think that the schools are doing enough? You have probably more experience than most people and could make that opinion. And how is your perceived?
I'm sorry, you did that again? Ask me the last part of that question again? You just dipped out for
a I mean, obviously there's a lot of schools that are receptive because it's a very hot topic. It's a politically very correct topic as well as it should be. Are you finding resistance in some of the schools?
Oh, well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about the schools. And I reach probably 40, 50,000 students in hundreds of schools every semester. And I can tell you that there's no such thing as a school that really doesn't give give a care. I mean, they're all well-intentioned, but the problem is they become so caught up in ineffective policies and procedures because they feel pressured by legislation that sometimes their good intentions don't work at the execution side. And what I'm finding with schools more and more is that they really do want to work effectively with parents, but it's the parents' approach. And I tell parents this all the time. If you come to a school and you're angry and offensive and unreasonable and irrational, you're not going to get the response that you need. What you've got to do when you walk into a school is that you've got to work with the school collaboratively. And your main focus shouldn't be making sure the bully gets punished, but making sure all the kids, the victims and the bullies, get help and support equally.
And because education.
Yes, and there's no such thing as a bad kid. Only good kids emerging out of bad circumstances. And what often happens is that parents of bullied kids become so fixated on pushing the school to punish the bully, and the school becomes so fixated on making that parent happy that everybody loses.
So what is your major... obstacle with the schools? Like every forward-thinking, progressive approach to problems of the family have core obstacles. Certainly, like for Jill and I, there's certain obstacles to parental alienation, like, well, it's the alienated parent's fault. What are some of the core obstacles that you keep running into that you wish you could change?
That's a great question. The biggest core obstacles that I wish I could change are schools that care more about what the community thinks of them than how they can enlist the community support and help. Like oftentimes I'll have a school who will bring me in, because my day-long program consists of two student presentations. Normally I have to do two to accommodate the whole school, that are about 90 minutes each, that are very intense, meant to compassionize the kids, a faculty workshop that's strategy intensive, and a parent-family seminar at night open to the public. And my biggest, oh, by the way, I want to ask you something, because I'm getting, people are posting me right now. If anyone wants to listen to us, where do they have to tune in? Like what radio station or how does someone tune in to listen to us now?
They can go to syndicatednews.net and just click on the link with your name.
Okay, go to syndicatednews.net. We're getting some more listeners in here. .net and click on my name.
Right.
Okay. Well, within the context of what I do, these are my three biggest frustrations with the school system. It is so wonderful to be able to talk to a judge and, you know, someone who can people who can do things about this. First, the teachers' unions. I know that the teachers' unions mean well, and they strive very hard to protect their constituency. But so often when I go into a school and I do my faculty workshop, which is 90 minutes, it's how to save a bully child from the perspective of the child. And I have life-saving techniques that have literally pulled kids out of the throes of attempted suicides when teachers have used my techniques. And I'll walk into the teacher workshop and I'll do a school of maybe, you know, 2,000 kids, and maybe there's, you know, 400 faculty at the school. And I'll walk into the teacher workshop, and there'll be 20 teachers there. And I'll say, well, where are the rest of the teachers? And they'll say, well, this wasn't mandated because it wasn't a required in-service day. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, volunteer only, and it will just kill me. You know, or the teachers union will say, you can only do 45 minutes. That's all the time they're allotted extra, and that will just kill me. So teachers union, that's number one. The second thing is the impotence of principals. In the American school system, the way it works is that principals are expected to hire all the new teachers. They're expected to mentor them and nurture them. But if a principal wants to fire a teacher in a public school, they have to get the permission of the superintendent. They have to present it in front of the school board. And in many, many schools, ladies, and this is a terrifying thing I'm about to tell you, so I hope you're sitting down, in many of these schools, I encounter teachers who are burnt out, who are tenured, who are only in it for the pension, and who really shouldn't be teaching anymore because they've lost their love of the game. They've lost that spark, and they become impatient and mean and bully the students. And so when the poor principal tries to do something, he or she can't because that teacher is tenured, has long-standing roots in the community, and the school board won't get rid of them. That's the second, my second frustration. And my third, which is probably, this is a flaw in our system. The American education system is ruled by local school boards. Anybody can run to be a school board member. So you have these school boards comprised of, oftentimes comprised of people who only care about how they can keep their property taxes down, making crucial decisions about the education of our children. And what I feel needs to be done is that I think there should be a minimum requirement of school board members that you have to have some sort of minimum experience or expertise in education to qualify you to run for the school board. But I don't think that anybody should be able to run for the school board. I don't, because if you don't understand education, if you don't understand the psychosocial dynamic of children, if you don't understand what teachers who love kids are up against every day and what principals are up against, you shouldn't be in a position to make decisions.
Well, and that same mindset goes right across the board. And you know, Michelle, I'm not saying anything you don't know to judges. You know, family court judges who've never practiced family law are sitting on the bench all across the nation. And that's, I agree with you in the same respect as school board members.
Yeah, isn't it? You know, I'm so used to it in terms of my world. But, of course, when I hear it having to do with the school board world, I say, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I live it, and I don't say it's crazy because
right.
I'm used to it.
But
it certainly drives the point home.
Yeah,
but there's another interesting perspective, too. You know, and I do a lot with judges. I work a lot with judges and prosecutors and the state's attorney's office, the different, you know, courts of the state's attorney's office. If they get things with bullying, if a bullying case comes in, I'll often get a prosecutor to call me and just kind of get my take on what may have happened, like my take on the bully's point of view or my take on the victim. And, you know, I'm very supportive of the court system here, and I have great respect for it. And imagine this. Let's say you have a family court judge who's never done family court before. It's affecting several families. Well, these school boards who are making decisions are affecting thousands of kids every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Jody, earlier you mentioned legislation, and I'm in Springfield where, you know, everything goes on. Allegedly, I think a lot of it goes on in Cook County than in Sangamon County, but our legislators, in their wisdom, voted on HB House Bill 5290 on Tuesday. The Illinois Senate rejected legislation requiring schools to adopt more detailed policies against bullying. The bill said schools must spell out how students can file anonymous complaints, how complaints will be investigated, and what can happen to students who bully classmates. The legislation, however, left it up to the schools to decide how each of those requirements would be met. What do you think about that legislation?
Well, here's what I think about all the legislation in general, and I can say this because I work with so many states, and they all have different legislation, and here's what I can say about legislation in general that also addresses my legislation here in my home state. I think the challenge with doing the legislation state by state is that it's like the Wild West. Remember the Wild West when we tamed the Wild West? Every sheriff had different rules and every county had different rules. I really do believe if I could have a fantasy, my fantasy would be that the federal government would put into place something like No Child Left Behind, but instead of it being about the academic standard for kids, it's about their emotional safety in schools. And I think that we need something federally mandated. I think every school in America needs to define bullying the same way. I think that every school in America needs to have the same response mechanisms. This is how we deal with it. This is what you're, this is if you're a student, what you're expected to do. And here's the other crucial element of this. With all the anti-bullying legislation and the ones, and also even universities that are adopting anti-bullying policies and procedures and practices, they're always telling students, this is what's expected of you. But very few of these educational entities tell students, and this is what you should expect of us in return. And if that doesn't happen, we're, as a school, we're going to do A, B, C, and D. And if A, B, C, and D doesn't happen, this is what you can do next. Because for so many kids, you know, and I think the legislation is wonderful, and I applaud the politicians trying to push it through. The problem is at the implementational level, the schools tell the kids what to do, and I cannot tell you how many hundreds of kids come up to me and tell me that they reported bullying, that they're supposed to, that they reported bullying, and they never heard anything back. And that's the problem. There has to be accountability on both sides.
What about
the school and the kids?
What are your thoughts about holding parents responsible for the action of their children? Where do you weigh in on that?
Well, I think that there's a very precarious line there. And I think that parents certainly need to be aware. And I think holding parents responsible to a certain degree is important. But I also think it goes beyond that. For example, there's a lot of legislation now about cyberbullying, and schools will often come to me and ask me to help them create policies and procedures in terms of dealing with it. And what I tell the schools is this, because a lot of schools want to wiggle out of it, and they want to say, well, the cyberbullying happened at home. It's the parents' fault, but we don't have any jurisdiction. And here's what I say. If whatever cyberbullying incident was discussed in school by the kids who did it, if they planned it or discussed it in school, or if it disrupts the learning day, then the school has an obligation to intervene. And I think with parents being held accountable for their kids' actions, I think that that's a healthy approach. But defining it and implementing it, I'm not sure how we would do that in a way that would benefit the kids. And that's something that would have to be studied by a panel and really looked at carefully, because it could come back to bite us in the butt very quickly.
So a couple of things. If taking martial arts and self-defense, and calling to mind the movie The Karate Kid,
mm-hmm.
if self-defense builds children's confidence, and confidence is a key thing here, as you describe
mm-hmm.
it, because the bullies can smell out vulnerability and desperation, I think was your word. What is your opinion about, you know, suiting the children up to defend themselves? Even though we all want nonviolence, what do you think about that?
Well, let me address that question in two parts, because I think it's a very good question. First of all, we need to really define bullying here. And there's a myth about bullying. Everyone assumes that bullying is just the acts of aggression. And when I go into schools and I give my student presentation, and it's very intense. I mean, it really is me reliving my past in front of thousands of kids, where I literally take them back with me to school and let them experience the humiliation with me so they really get a sense of it. And what I tell students all across this country is that bullying isn't just the mean things you do. It's all the nice things you never do. Letting someone sit alone at lunch, letting someone walk to class alone. That bullying is not just the deliberate acts of cruelty. It's also the inadvertent omission of compassion. And while I advocate martial arts, because martial arts is not by nature aggressive or violent, it's about being centered and being controlled and being calm and with peace within your own body. So I think that martial arts are wonderful, but I think there's a much larger question here. The kids who suffer the most in our schools, and as I said before, there's two kinds of bullied students. The overtly bullied, who are bullied in all the obvious ways. And then you have the invisible student. And I want you to think about this child. This is a child who doesn't get made fun of necessarily, who doesn't get beaten on or spat upon. But this kid is just not on anyone's social radar. They walk to class alone. No one really talks to them at lunch. They never get invited to anything. And these are the kids who are really in a whole different kind of danger. Because if I slam you into a locker, if I write slut across your book bag, you can say to yourself, there's something wrong with Jody. But if all I ever do is ignore you, never talk to you, never include you in anything, it's not going to say, it's not going to make you say there's something wrong with Jody. It's going to make you say, there must be something wrong with me. Mm. And you will carry those wounds of self-doubt your entire life. And that's why I do so much work with adult survivors of peer abuse. Because there are people right now running our corporations, running our hospitals, running our governments, running our schools, who are still carrying the wounds of rejection from their youth. And that's why we need to curb bullying, not just to save the kids who are suffering today, but to save the adults who they will become.
Well, would you care to weigh in about whether or not you think that there is, in light of cyberbullying, in light of texting?
Michelle, yeah. Before we get into cyberbullying, I want to pick up a call from a young woman in New York. She is Katie Davis, and she is 17 years old. Katie, are you there?
Yes, hi. Hi, Katie.
How are
you?
Hi.
Do you have a question for Jody?
No, I really have. I just wanted to ask her a question real quick.
Sure.
Okay. I want to tell you something about myself first.
Okay.
I'm kind of in the same path that you're in. I stick up for people, and plus I have my own page for it, for bullying, anti-bullying. It's called Take a Stand Against Bullying.
Wow.
And you were just talking about how kids in school, like, you may see them walk alone or nobody's talking to them. Well, that's the kind of stuff in my school that I am changing because – whenever I see someone like that, I'm always, you know, right there talking to them or walking with them. Because, like with me, I don't like to see people walk alone or be alone. So that's why, and my question to you is that, I know it's more about, like, how many years have you been doing this?
Katie, first of all, I have to tell you, you are absolutely precious and adorable, and that your parents have done a wonderful job with you. And you should give yourself big props because you're amazing. And I've been doing this for the past 13 years. I was a publicist, believe it or not, for 20 years. And then I decided it was time to go public with my childhood, and I wrote a book, and then it changed everything, and I gave up my old career. And now I do this full time. And, Katie, I can tell you something about what you're doing at school. It's incredible. And I would even encourage you to take it a step further, meaning a lot of these kids that are all alone at school that you walk to class with and maybe you sit with at lunch, they're also really lonely at home. They're lonely on the weekends. They're lonely during summer break. And maybe this summer, because summer is coming, you could get some of their phone numbers and their emails and hang out with them during the summer and maybe hang out with them on a Saturday night. Not only will you be making them happy, but I promise you, sweetheart, you're saving lives every day and you may not even know it.
Well, actually, you're right on that, but I somewhat do know because I had a couple people come to me before and say, this is really sad. You know, I kind of cried when they told me. They said to me, I just want to tell you that you basically saved my life because I was actually thinking about committing suicide. But now that you came into my life, you've changed that, and I actually have someone to come to school to see and talk to every day. And basically, that just touched my heart. I was like, yeah, I'm doing a good thing. And plus, I tell all my friends because my slogan is spread kindness, not hate. So I kind of tell everyone to do that.
Well, Katie, you're going to do something very, very important with your life. I can tell you that. May I ask you, are you meeting any resistance from your fellow schoolmates?
What What do you mean by that?
Is somebody saying that, making fun of you for doing it? Or are you getting supported?
Well, on the bullying part, it's not actually over for me. I still get bullied till this day. But
you get bullied, Katie, right? You told me in the chat room that you still get bullied every day, right?
Yes, I do.
And who do you go to for help? What in a perfect world, how would you like to be helped?
I really don't really go to anybody to get help because I know I have inner strength and I have my hope and faith, so that's pretty much all I need. I just ignore them. I don't really need to listen to them. I just encourage them. And, sometimes I look at them and I'm like, do you need a friend? Because I'll be your friend.
Katie, I have a question for you. Katie, it's Jody. What are you starting your senior year in September, so you're in your junior year right now?
No, I'm a senior now.
You're a senior now, so you're graduating. And are you going off to college, or what are your plans when you graduate?
Wow, that's a tough question for me. I haven't thought about that. Well, the possibility is that I may not be able to graduate, so it's sad to say, and it lets a lot of people down, but I'm probably going to not be able to go to college because they don't probably accept people with GEDs. So, yeah.
Well, Katie, I can tell you this, and I want you to listen to me very carefully.
All right, I'm listening.
You are an extraordinary young woman, and you are what I wish every teenager that I met in the hundreds of schools I go to and in the thousands of students I meet, you are what I wish they could aspire to be, your heart and your courage and your strength. And don't give up ever. You're so young. Don't give up on your education, and don't you ever change. You are absolutely perfect and beautiful the way you are.
Yes, and I'm sorry to call and kind of interrupt
Katie,
that little
Katie, network. Can you give us your Facebook page again?
Sure. And another thing why I'm doing this is somebody said, I don't know who it was, but someone said that my parents, or something about my parents, to be honest, they are not the ones who actually... Let's just say I do not get treated right at home. So they're not the ones that kind of, boost that up. I kind of saw the way I'm treated, and I don't know.
I sort of figured that out because I was going to say to you, well, who in the world told you that you can't go to college on a GED? The colleges are full of people. The easiest route on a GED is get your GED, go to a community college, and then transfer wherever you like, because most community colleges get people into very good schools.
And hopefully, Katie, you've got your Facebook page, Take a Stand Against Bullying, and maybe when you get your degree or sometime in college, you can intern with Jody and help her out.
Well, and I was just going to suggest, too, Katie, if you would like to do this, you can ask that. That was very sage advice. Is you can get your GED, go to a community college, work really hard to get good grades and be active in activities there, and transfer when you're ready to transfer to a four-year university or college. You email me and I will write you a personal letter of recommendation to the school, and you can go to Jody@jodyblanco.com is my email. And you say in the email how we met today, and I will write you a letter of recommendation for college. I would be honored to do that for you.
Okay,
wow.
Katie. You have a great night, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so
Thanks
much for calling in and helping so many people.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye-bye. Now, Michelle, you may talk about cyberbullying.
I wasn't actually going to talk about cyberbullying. I was asking Jody whether she had an opinion of whether or not the children are less compassionate these days because so much of their emotional interchange is bled out through texting and email and Facebook, and they're not so many relationships aren't hands-on all the time.
You guys ask really good questions. That's a really good question. And I could tell you this. I often am asked, is bullying any worse today than it was 30 years ago? And my answer is the same all the time. No. Bullying is no worse today than it was 30 years ago. What's changed is the weaponry to achieve it is far more sophisticated. And because of the Internet, it cuts a wider and a deeper swath. 30 years ago, if I wanted to start a rumor about you in school, I'd put it on a piece of notebook paper, and I'd pass it around the class, and that would be it. Today, that same rumor could be turned into a video and uploaded on YouTube, mm-hmm. It could be on a Facebook wall or Forum Spring. So it's the weaponry is more sophisticated, like going from rocks and arrows to cannons and artillery. And so it's not that kids are any less or more compassionate today than they were. It's just that the weaponry that's available to them is far more intensive and it really, it takes something that would have just happened in a day and it gives it a whole nother life of its own on cyberspace.
And the really horrible thing about cyberbullying is it's not just when kids go home from school, it's over, right, Jody? It's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week thing. I mean, they can get to you on Saturday and Sunday at midnight at 3 o'clock in the morning. So text and texting, and I mean, the Internet can be such a great thing, but in this case, it's such a horrible tool that kids can use to hurt other children. And I mean, there have been many cases all across the nation where kids have literally committed suicide because of cyberbullying.
Well, yeah, and here are the two things about cyberbullying that are so unnerving. First, when I was a kid and I was tormented when I was in school, I was spat on. I was told I should have been an abortion. I was beaten. I mean, I was excluded relentlessly. I mean, my school years from fifth grade through high school were an unrelenting, merciless nightmare. But the one thing I had is that I knew when I got home from school at night, I was safe. Now, kids aren't even safe in their own homes. The minute they switch on their computers or the minute they turn on their cell phones, they're assaulted. So it's like constantly being beaten over and over and over. There's no escape. The second thing about cyberspace is the anonymity of it.
Right.
But interestingly enough, a lot of the bullying, the cyberbullying, these students don't choose to be anonymous. They want their victims to know exactly who they are. And one of the more recent ways that kids are using cyberspace to bully is on Facebook. You know how they have an event function on Facebook?
Yeah.
So these teens will create these events, invite everybody and exclude the same people on purpose. And the events themselves don't even exist. It's just a way to make someone feel excluded and unwanted.
Tell us what we need to know about bullies.
Tell us
what is it we need
to
either know, understand, or what is it we don't know other than the kind of, is it mean is not genetic, mean is a learned thing.
No. This is what you need to know. The bully is bleeding too. The bully and the victim are flip sides of the same coin. Both are driven by the desperate need to fit in, run amok, mm-hmm. and they simply assume different roles within that escalating dynamic. And traditional punishment will never work on a bully. All traditional punishment does is make an angry child angrier and an insensitive child more insensitive. I advocate a supplemental approach that I call compassionate discipline. Here's an example. Let's say that you've got a group of kids in a school, you know, the typical rich clique, who pick on the have-nots, who pick on the kids who have to buy their jeans at Goodwill instead of Hollister or Abercrombie. Well, what are you going to do? Give these kids a detention for not letting someone sit with them at lunch, for not inviting them to their party? It's not going to work. Instead, I'd recommend that you have someone at school volunteer to be the chaperone, a teacher, and take this group of I call them the Abercrombie Tormentors. That's my nickname for them. Take this group of Abercrombie Tormentors to a local homeless shelter where they have to serve food to the homeless. and each tormentor has to interview at least one of those homeless people about their dreams and aspirations and how they got derailed. And then they have to come up with an idea as a group of how they can make the people in that shelter feel validated as human beings. Perhaps it's putting on a talent show with the drama coach or painting a mural in the front hallway with the art teacher. But something that humanizes those people. And I promise you, if you've got a kid who's constantly making fun of students who have to shop at Goodwill instead of Hollister, if they meet real people who truly have no one and nothing in this world, they will never make fun of that kid with jeans that don't fit right again.
I want to go back, Jody, to something you said a second ago, that there's really a kind of a symbiotic relationship between the tormentor and the person who's being tormented. And I want to tell you a story that I told Michelle earlier today. I had a Korean foreign exchange student, a beautiful young woman who keeps very much to herself. She doesn't really interact, but studies and does her job. And I took her to school every morning, and we would see a young man walking all by himself, in front of him a large group of kids and in back of him a large group of kids, but he walked alone every morning. And I said to her, that young man doesn't have any friends. He seems very sad. Why don't you get out and talk to him? And so she's very shy. And after I said it, you know, multiple times, she finally walked out and said, hi. And the next morning it was, hi, how are you? And on and on. And finally she said to me, I said, how's it going with that young man? And she said, he's mean. And I said, Jenny, that is his coping mechanism because nobody talks to him, and I don't think he knows how to react to the way that you're trying to interact with him. So how if someone like Jenny wants to approach these kids who are so reclusive and have pulled inside themselves so much and have adopted this combative attitude when people do approach them, how do you deal with that? What could I tell her to do?
What I would tell Jenny to do, and I get this question all the time, it's funny because after I do my student presentations, I give the kids an opportunity for Q&A, and I get this question from at least a half a dozen kids every single student talk I do. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell these kids is they're mean because they're afraid, because they've been hurt and now they're afraid, and you just have to keep trying. You can't give up. If it doesn't work the first time, then you keep trying. You keep trying to stimulate a conversation. You invite them to something. Do you want to sit with me at lunch today? Do you want to hang out with my friends and I? And you keep trying until they do trust you. And I promise that if your effort is sincere and you keep trying, you don't give up, they will come around. And it's also a very good idea to go to a counselor. For the student who's trying, to go to the counselor and say, listen, I'm really worried about so-and-so. They're angry and they're hurt, and I'm trying to be friends with them, and I'm getting resistance. Can you help this person? Can you reach out and elicit some adult support in the school?
I want to ask you something, because a lot of our listeners are alienated parents, and here's how the question is going to sort of go. Do bullying children become bullying adults? Do they then become lawyers? And what do you do about it? No, I'm really serious. What does one do about a bullying lawyer? Is that is the seeds planted early on? And are they just children who are bullying in the schoolyard?
Well, it's very interesting. When you talk about the schoolyard bully, that bully is really not doing any long-term damage to anyone because he or she is picking on everyone indiscriminately. It's when a group of kids single out a kid who's different for whatever reason, and they make that child's life a living hell, not by virtue of the acts of cruelty they commit, but the kindnesses they deny. So I think in terms of, you know, and I've seen bullying lawyers in family court. I've witnessed it. I've even been the victim of it myself. I went through a divorce, and I was the victim of it myself. And I can tell you that it is a horrific and demeaning experience. And the bullying lawyer that I had to face, if you were to ask me, do I think he was a bully in school? no, I would tell you that I think he was the victim.
Oh, wow. So how is there something you might say? Because I mentor young women attorneys on and one of our topics is bullying.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me. I think what happens, it's the whole, it's what I call adult survivor syndrome. Adult survivors is peer abuse, whether they were invisible students or overtly bullied, typically fall into two categories when they grow up. They either become obsessive compulsive overachievers because they're constantly trying to block out those negative voices from school, convincing them that they're worthless. That's what I became. Or they never live up to their full potential, and they sort of stumble through life trying to find themselves. And I think in cases, and I've met, you know, a lot of bullying lawyers in family court, and where I've seen them just eviscerate a parent in open court. And my instinct, and this is based strictly anecdotally on my own experience, I don't have anything clinical to back this up, but looking these lawyers in the eyes, speaking to them afterwards, having communication with them, I would say that the majority of them were absolutely not bullies when they were kids. I think they're adult survivors of peer abuse, trying to overcompensate. I think they're driven by the right reasons, but end up behaving in all the wrong ways.
Wow. Well, Jody, I want to talk a little bit about, because we've got about 3 minutes left. You have an event coming up in Chicago on June 4th for our friend Lisa Madigan, Women in Words. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm absolutely Lisa Madigan's biggest fan. I think that woman is extraordinary. I think that I'd like to see her governor. I'd like to see her president one day. I really would. I do. I just think she's extraordinary, and I'm so honored. She invited me to participate in an event with her. It's a fundraiser where every year she focuses on different authors, and this year she's working with me, and we're going to be having a discussion about school bullying, sort of an open forum where she and I discuss it, you know, the warning signs, what to do if your child is being bullied, how to help the bullies, what our schools can do, just really delving into the subject from a very human point of view. And I'm so honored that she's asked me to do this event with her, and I will be doing my very best to do that extraordinary woman proud.
Great. Where are they holding that?
I think it's at the Paris Club. I believe it's at the Paris Club, and it's on Monday evening, and I'm sure if anyone is curious about the details, they can contact Lisa's office, and I'm sure they'll fill all the details with them.
Of course, Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General of the State of Illinois, and you can contact her office and talk to them about getting some tickets to come and hear Jody and Lisa interact about school bullying. How can people get a hold of you, Jody, if they want to know more about your books, buy your books, all those good things?
Or my in-school, or to bring me into their school to speak. Absolutely.
Right, absolutely. And that's the other thing I want to say to you. I'm going to talk to Dr. Milton and see if I can get you down here to the Springfield School District, District 186, and get you in here to speak to everybody here, because I know, you know, bullying doesn't know any parameters. It touches every school district across the country and all around the world, and so we can get you down here in Sangamon County and get you doing some good.
And New Trier as well. If you haven't already been to New Trier, I have a...
No, I would love to go to New Trier, and I, ladies, I would be at both schools with my jingle bells on. And let me give you my information. My website is jodeblanco.com, and that's JodeeBlanco. And there's footage of me speaking. There's footage of me doing media. I mean, it's a very comprehensive site. And if anyone wants to call, my office number is 708-873-9225. And thank you for the extraordinary work that you both do. I'm humbled and delighted that you asked me to be on the show tonight, and I'm always available should you need anything.
Great. Thank you so much. This was really enlightening.
Really,
thank you so much.
Jody, thank you for all that you're doing, and anybody that wants to know more about Jody, again, you can contact her at jody@jodeblanco.com, and, of course, her books. Jody, your books, the names, really quickly.
Please Stop Laughing at Me, Please Stop Laughing at Us, and the Please Stop Laughing at Me Journal.
wonderful. Buy those books, and if you know somebody who's being bullied, employ some of the things that Jody talked about here tonight, because it's no fun to be bullied, and it has to stop. So tune in again next time, and we are so happy that you listened in tonight. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Jody, thank you. Michelle, thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and have a great weekend, too.
Talk to you
and
soon.
I'll see you next week at the American Federation of Family Courts.
I sure will. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again, ladies.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.